Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
Do the saving that you need to do. If you haven't started in your 20s, then you can start in your 30s. If you haven't started in your 30s, you can start in your 40s. If you haven't started in your 40s, you can still start in your 50s.
Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here. When you take a peek at your retirement savings, On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about how much you saved? Excited? Freaked out? Or maybe somewhere in between? All right, no matter how you feel about your retirement savings, the truth is the system was set up to work well for only a very small group of people. The American retirement system, according to our guest Martin Bailey, author of the new book, The Retirement Challenge, is completely obsolete. So the logical question is, why did this happen?
We were moving towards a system where everybody had a pension. We hadn't reached it. Only about a half of workers had pensions. But that's what the goal was, that everyone would have a pension, work at a job, and then retire and get a pension from that job.
The system might not be the best, for sure. But saving for retirement is ultimately up to you. So in this episode, Martin shares the history and the future of our retirement system, what to do if you haven't saved as much as you would like to, and dives deep into the question of, will Social Security actually be here for me? More than anything, I think his advice here is what really matters.
If you take the right steps, and it doesn't mean you have to do them today or tomorrow, but if you eventually take the right steps, you can ensure yourself a nice, secure retirement. That is within your grasp.
Real quick before we jump into the conversation, I just want to talk to you about the sponsors of this podcast. You know, it's my job to bring you only the best companies and products that I believe will help you live a better life, save some time and money, and help you build and protect your cash. So to do that, I personally vet every single sponsor to make sure they are Shauna approved. These sponsors help keep this show free to you and allow us to bring on some amazing guests to help you on your money journey. So here's where you come in. I need you to do me a favor and like and support the sponsors on this show that you love so we can keep this podcast growing for years. You can find all the links in the show notes to all our sponsors, along with a special code for all of our ETM discounts and deals. Thanks so much, my friend. Into the episode we go. We have done a lot of episodes over the last 8 years all about saving for retirement, but we really haven't done a deep dive into the retirement system as a whole. And I think this is such a fascinating topic and something that everybody needs to really learn about and understand how this works. And you say that the retirement system is obsolete, that it only works for a small percentage of people. You have this great book out called The Retirement Challenge, where you go really in depth of the retirement system. But just to start us out, Martin, you know, why is the retirement system obsolete? And why haven't there been any changes made?
Well, the retirement system is obsolete. I guess that's a strong word. But we were moving towards a system where everybody had a pension. We hadn't reached it. Only about a half of workers had pensions. But that's what the goal was, that everyone would have a pension, work at a job, and then retire and get a pension from that job. And that would be then supplemented by Social Security and to some extent by private saving as well. That was the so-called three-legged stool of retirement. But private companies certainly, and even to some extent the public sector, are really getting rid of their pension programs. And so much more of retirement has really been pushed back onto families. We have families now have to make that decision to both save and then manage their retirement saving so that they can flourish during the retirement years. It's also the case that people are living longer, so that has been a change too.
And when that shift was made where you now have to, you know, take the onus on yourself to save for retirement, and I want to go deeper into that in just a little bit, but when that shift happened, what we're seeing, you know better than I do, but people are not saving for retirement. So they have this option available. And I know that the government's trying to do all sorts of things to try and figure out how to, you know, auto enroll people into retirement savings. But the numbers are showing that we're not saving. Is that correct?
Well, some are, some aren't. Certainly upper income people and even some middle income people are doing pretty well at saving. And if you ask how big is the kitty for retirement saving, it's about between $20 and $25 trillion nationally. So there's quite a bit of money there. And then, of course, a lot of people own their own homes. And so that's an asset that can be used. And people have other savings as well. So there are some people that are saving, but unfortunately, as you correctly say, not everyone is saving. There are a lot of people that really don't have very much money. And even those that are saving in so-called 401k type plans, that's a plan that works through saving through your employer. The average size of that amount is not very large. I think there was a report said for people over 65, the average amount was about $87,000, which doesn't going to get you very far in terms of lasting a retirement for 20 or 30 years. Right. So, you know, yes, so people are saving. Some people are pretty well looked after, but many people do not have enough in saving. And there is another problem that I'd like to address, which is that even those that are saving aren't necessarily feeling secure because they don't know how long they're going to live, so how long their savings are going to have to last. They don't know about whether they're going to need end-of-life care, whether they're going to need to go into a nursing home, and how they're going to manage that. So even even those that and of course the uncertainties of the equity markets, as we've experienced in the last year or so, there's still a lot of uncertainty, even for those that have saved.
And even, you know, we have a wide range of listeners on this show, people who are just out of college and kind of getting started, and then people who are 50s and 60s and in nearing retirement. So we have a very wide range of listeners. But, you know, I'm thinking even younger people who I've heard a lot from, you know, where they're like, let me take this over. So a lot of the younger listeners are sending questions in and really curious about why should they start saving from a very young age? You know, most of them have seen what happened in 2008, 2009, and, you know, kind of the what just happened with the markets the last couple of years coming out of COVID. And they're really nervous about putting money away, particularly invested in the stock market for retirement. And they're thinking, you know, if I'm in my 20s, why do I need to worry about saving for retirement now? What do you have to say to those that are younger that are listening?
Well, I hope first of all, I'm glad that you're getting those inquiries and that the people and your listeners are at least thinking about the problem and what they should do about it. And I understand both the fact that retirement seems a long way off. Nobody really wants to think about being 60, 70, or 80 when you're young and active, and that's far away. And obviously the uncertainty in markets makes people nervous. So I understand very much the comments that you're receiving. What I would say is, if you are able to set a bit aside every month or whenever you get a paycheck, and do that consistently, maybe in your 20s, maybe you start in your 30s, or even in your 40s if you haven't started already, that will put you you'll be able to have a nice, secure retirement. Obviously, we're going to talk about some of the other problems, but basically by saving consistently over your lifetime, that will allow you to have that secure retirement. Now, if you're young, you've got a lot of other demands. Maybe you're getting married, maybe you're having children, maybe you're building your career, maybe you're changing careers, something like that. Those things obviously have to be taken into account. You have to address all of those issues. Maybe you have student loans to pay off. So there are many other demands on saving. But if you can manage to just set a little bit aside, then there is this sort of magic of compound interest that allows that to accumulate over time, so that when you do come to retire, when you are ready to end your career or think about moving to something different, then you'll have that money available. Now, the stock market does go up and down. Obviously, that's unsettling. But in the long run, the American stock market has done well. Yes, we've had big downturns as we did in 2009 and as we experienced this past year. And even now, things are still fairly uncertain. But my message there, I think, is don't panic if the market starts to go down. If you can hang in there, not pull money out, and just keep saving consistently, then you will, in the end, do well. In fact, when the market goes down, as it did last year and has been vacillating a bit this year, then if you're a young person, then saving may actually it's a good time to save, because the chances are the market will eventually recover. I don't know when, but I think it will eventually recover, and you'll do well out of the money you've set aside.
So kind of sticking along that theme for here for a minute, you know, are there stages to saving and planning for retirement when we're in our 30s, 40s, and 50s? Or are those years just all about, let's put as much money as we can into our retirement vehicles and save as much as we can in the system that we have available to us?
I think there are other priorities that need to be weighed. I don't want to sort of give very specific advice as to how much you should save or how much you should put into other things. I think people, you need to maybe get some professional advice if you can. Try to get some unbiased professional advice. And then you need to weigh off, do I want to buy a house? I think for most people, that's a good investment to make, that you can live in the house and then it will have value for you going forward. Obviously, if you have student loans, they will need to be gradually repaid. So I think there aren't sort of a golden rule, but if you've got if you're in a job, where they're offering you a retirement plan, and hopefully it's a plan where the employer will make a matching contribution. So if you have an employer that will say, we'll match what you put in up to 5% of your salary, then I would strongly recommend that you put at least 5% into that 401k or there are other similar plans like 401k plans. So you certainly want to take advantage of the matches that the employer provides. And even if you don't have an employer that's matching, or if you need to set up your own IRA, maybe you're self-employed or working in the gig economy, then I think trying to at least get a modest amount, maybe 5% or so of your income into that saving account, and do that consistently. Because you do get one advantage, that those savings can occur out of pre-tax income. So the amount that's taken out of your paycheck or the amount that you set aside from your earnings will go straight into the saving pool and doesn't cost you as much in terms of your actual take-home pay. So there is a tax break that you get associated with it, as well as perhaps the match that your employer makes.
I love that. Tax breaks and matches. Two favorite words. Let's go back a little bit to the retirement system. You talked about it being obsolete. I'm curious, Martin, what would a good retirement system look like?
Well, we think the best approach is not to make really drastic changes in our current system. I mean, there may be a case for some drastic changes. There are people who think we should have a kind of national retirement like the Europeans tend to do. But those have created problems in Europe in recent years. So we don't do that. And in any case, even if you do support that kind of more drastic plan, it really is not going to go through Congress. So you have to be realistic. So the changes that we describe are ones that we think are feasible and that would make a great deal of difference. So the first one is making sure that everyone has access to a 401k type plan. Doesn't have to be 401k exactly, but that idea. And that has actually been making some progress. We did see in recent legislation that there are greater incentives for companies to set up such plans. So the number of plans should increase. There are also 12 states and the city of Seattle that actually provide for their residents a plan like that, so you can save through that system, the state system or the city system. So those are gradually coming, but at the moment it's only been about a half of workers that have access to those plans, and we would like to see steps taken that gave everyone access. Ideally, we would like to see the federal government set up a plan so that you can save through that. And this would not be something where the federal government owns your money or anything. It would be done very separately, actually, from the federal government, sort of like government employees have now, the so-called TSP plan. That would allow any American who wanted to have a retirement saving plan to be able to do it easily and at reasonably low cost. So that would be a big, big, big change. We also think, and again, there have been changes in the law just recently that helped this along, that automatic enrollment in some of those retirement plans. So your employer just automatically, when you take the job, you're automatically enrolled in the retirement plan. If you decide that you don't want to belong to it, that's up to you. So you still have discretion to do that. But you are enrolled automatically and you have to so-called opt out. That's a system that you may have heard of called nudge, where we're nudging people to save towards saving, and they can decide they don't want to do that. But we think that would help a lot. One of the big things that needs to be done is to reform of the so-called entitlements. Sometimes I just sort of bang my head against the wall because I don't see us making the kind of progress that we need to make in that direction. Social Security and Medicare are, I think, essential to our retirement system, and they actually have been successful. They are big parts of the reason why our retirement system actually is not too bad. At the moment, as you know, Social Security will run out of money and Medicare will run out of money. That doesn't actually mean that people will stop getting benefits. I think there'll be some kind of stopgap measure, even if the trust funds run dry. But it creates an uncertainty for people, a feeling that they can't rely on these programs. And so I really wish Congress, both sides of the aisle, would get together. And the sort of a conspiracy where nobody wants to adjust benefits, nobody wants to raise taxes, and so we don't do anything about getting these programs under control and making them secure for Americans. And I think that's a great pity. And it is possible to do. We can make some modest adjustments. I'm not in favor of big cuts in these programs, but we can make some adjustments in the cost of these programs that would be helpful. And then in the end, I think we may have to raise the revenues a bit, which may mean increasing the tax rate, the FICA tax rate, and then nobody wants to do that, but I don't see much of an alternative, or else raising the cap, the salary at which Social Security cuts out. So I think we're going to have to do some unpopular things to get those programs on track. And obviously, it's very hard to get Washington sometimes to do these unpopular things. So, but that would make a huge difference. And the other place that I've mentioned is doing something about the amount of uncertainty faced by people who retire. So one of the things that's been found is that people who retire with a decent nest egg, maybe they have $500,000 or $1 million, that's quite a bit of money. What do they do with that when they retire?
Right, yeah.
Well, a lot of times they don't spend it. They hold on to it. They sort of hoard it, if you like. So they're not allowing themselves to live as comfortably as they could, given the hard work that they've had and the amount that they've saved. And why is that? Well, we actually don't have a definitive answer to it, but I think the most likely answer is that they're worried that, that they don't know how long they're going to live. So there's uncertainty about longevity. Am I going to live until I'm 85 or 90 or 95? And will I need, therefore, all of this money later? And the second thing, of course, is will I need to go into a nursing home, or if not a nursing home, have some kind of full-time a person come in and care for me because I'm not able to look after myself. So people are worried about that eventuality. And there are insurance markets that in principle ought to be able to solve that problem. One is to take at least part of your portfolio and buy an annuity with it, because that guarantees will last until you until you die, perhaps until either you or your spouse, both you or your spouse die. So it covers both of you.
Break down for a second, Martin, if you will, what an annuity is for those who maybe have never heard what that is.
Well, an ordinary income annuity is something that you buy. You can buy it along the way, so you can make it part of your retirement package, although unfortunately, most employers don't offer that as part of their retirement 401k plans. We would like it if more did. But even if they don't, as you get to retirement, you can then take part of your retirement saving, or all of it if you want to, but most people, I think, want to keep part of it for their own control. And you can buy an annuity, and what that is you pay over a certain amount of money to an annuity company or an insurance company, and in return, they promise to pay you a certain amount of money every quarter or every month. And so you basically are getting a paycheck on a regular basis that lasts throughout your life. And that's a regular income annuity. And
the weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited. And it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding? Or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical. If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this, they release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance.
There are a lot of annuities sold. Unfortunately, not that many are of that form. There are annuities that really don't take that form. They're really something that more rich people use so that they can cut back on their taxes. So the annuity market is not working the way it should.
Go back a little bit to Social Security and talk a little bit about Social Security. You know, I think for many of us, it feels like something that was sold, particularly to our parents or our grandparents' generation is kind of this, you know, magic bullet that would provide retirement funds that would either make up for what we were getting from our private pensions or that we had saved in our retirement plans. But as you mentioned, that Social Security is going to run dry. And I think, you know, you talked about the sentiment that so many of us feel nervous. We're not sure what's going to happen when we get older. But there's a just sort of general misunderstanding of what Social Security is, why it was started, and maybe even like why is it running out?
Well, it actually was started it was started for complicated reasons. I mean, it was started by Roosevelt in the 1930s, and one of the motivations at the time was to encourage older people to retire because retirement hadn't really gotten going as a concept that much by the 1930s. So that's not necessarily a good reason today. Also, it was on the contrary, in fact, we may want to encourage people to keep working a little bit longer to make sure they have. That's another way to get a more secure retirement. Also, it was meant to be. I mentioned the three-legged stool, so it was sort of meant to go along with company pensions and private or individual savings to form that combination of things which would provide it for an adequate retirement. So it wasn't necessarily set up to be the sole source of income for retirees, even though for a lot of retirees today, or quite a few retirees today, it's either their sole source of income or their main source of income. So it's really sort of gone beyond, I think, what it was originally intended for. Remember, we did have reforms to Social Security. There was the Greenspan Commission in the 1980s, and that was to put Social Security on an even keel for 75 years. Well, I can't quite do the arithmetic in my head. I'm not sure if we've gone 75 years. But, you know, Greenspan and the Commission came fairly close to setting it on track. But it didn't anticipate those changes, didn't anticipate the fact that the birth rate has declined as much as it has, and people are living longer. But it's really the decline in the birth rate that has changed the circumstances. So there are now a lot fewer young people that are paying taxes into the system and a lot more people drawing benefits out. So it was set up as a so-called pay-as-you-go system. So it wasn't set up where the amount that you paid in, it's not like the 401k. It's not really like a savings plan. It was that you paid taxes, and then those taxes from working people are then used to pay the benefits to the retirees. So when there are more retirees and not as many workers, that puts a big stress on the system. And we haven't really learned to cope with that, and people are trying to deal with that without adjusting benefits or without adjusting taxes adequately to deal with that situation.
Right. So we just end up back at the same kind of mess as we've been talking all about the retirement system. We come back to politics and people, you know, not wanting to do certain things. I'm also wondering, you know, I have a lot of listeners who wrote in during the pandemic who were nervous about continuing to put in their retirement plans because they just didn't know what was ahead. You know, we were watching the news and reading articles, and we just didn't know what was going to happen. And then, you know, 2021 came and we felt a little bit better. And then 2022, and a lot of people got nervous about being laid off from their jobs and not sure if they're going to be able to keep their job. And so they continue to kind of pull back from saving for retirement. But I'm wondering from your expertise point of view, you know, have you seen COVID and the pandemic impact our retirement?
When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Obviously, it's been a huge and horrible event that has happened to us that we didn't anticipate anything like this. And of course, the number of deaths, including, of course, disproportionately among the elderly population and the people in nursing homes. So it's really changed people's perceptions of the going into a nursing home, because that was where a lot of the deaths occurred. So it's really been just a terrible thing. And it's also, as you point out, particularly in the early part when it first came along in 2020, a great many people lost their jobs. I would point out that right now the unemployment rate is 3.9%, which is the lowest that it's been since 1969. So there are plenty of jobs. And I think looking forward, in part because a lot of older people are going to be retiring, the demand for workers is going to be pretty high. I'm not going to say we'll never have a recession. We might have a recession even this year. There will be ups and downs in the economy. But I think I would say to your listeners that the chances overall are going to be pretty good, that employment prospects are going to be okay. Now, we have some longer-term trends going on. So we have a sort of a bifurcation in the labor market, if I can use that word, which is to say that some people are doing really well in the labor market and a lot of people are not doing so well. So there's a split between those that are making, you know, $15, $20 an hour and those that are making, you know, $500 an hour. And that's a big split. But nevertheless, I think it's fair to say that the demand for labor will be there. And if people can watch out for their skills, make sure maybe they update their skills, make sure they know what jobs are available, and perhaps sometimes be prepared to move, the labor market prospects should be reasonably good going forward. Now, in terms of investments, we already mentioned that. I don't think anybody, and I don't like to make any specific predictions about what markets and bonds are going to do. But I think if you hold a mix of equities and bonds, favoring equities in your young years and then gradually shifting more into bonds as you get older, that's a pretty good way of ensuring that if you save at a decent amount, then you will do, you will have enough money when you retire.
One of the reasons I was so excited to chat with you is you have a vast experience in economics, as you've already just, you know, delighted us with so much information. You even had a stint in the Clinton administration. You've really seen close up how our economy can be all over the place, especially the last couple of years. I'm wondering if you could share with everyone listening, maybe what are some of your most impactful money lessons that you've learned over the years of working in the administrations and just, you know, studying everything about economics?
Gosh, that's a big question, and I'll try to do my best to answer you on that. I think the thing I'd point to first of all is that I've always been what's sometimes referred to as a neoclassical economist, with a belief also that we need to use macroeconomic policy to keep things on an even keel. In which we let people find the jobs that are best suited to them, to make the investments that they think are the right investments to make. People make decisions as individuals, as families, that companies seek out the best opportunities, both for profits and innovation and to improve their own productivity. And that's the best way to run the economy and provide economic growth and provide the benefits for all of us. And I still fundamentally believe that. But I'm also struck by the fact that as our economy changes, as the environment changes, that there are ways in which we need to use economic policy to help people improve the opportunities that they have. So provide good education, provide training programs for people that need training, to I mentioned the nudge, so nudging people towards making the right savings decisions. So I think we need a combination of the benefits of the market system, which America has really excelled at, but also combined with helping ordinary people, and particularly, I think, lower income people that often don't have those opportunities, giving them a helping hand.
Well, tell us a little bit about your book, The Retirement Challenge. I can only imagine how long it probably took you to compile all the data and write the book. Tell us about, you know, your journey to write this big book that really encapsulates our retirement system.
Well, I've studied a number of different things. As you said, I had a stint in the Clinton administration. I also had a stint in one of the major economic consulting firms. So I've done some private sector stuff and been in the government, as well as academia and at the Brookings Institution, where I am now. And the topics I've studied, one of the main ones was productivity, which is an understanding how it's one of the main drivers of economic growth. And I have always wanted to understand more about that and what we can do to improve economic growth. But I've been gradually getting older, as we all do, and getting towards the end of my career. And so I thought I'd like to do something that I felt was worthwhile and would match with my own particular interests. So I linked up with Ben Harris, who has studied as a leading economist and who has studied retirement issues for a long time. And we got together and with Brookings and his position at the Kellogg School, which is at Northwestern University. We ran a project which was supported by some foundations. And we brought people in, some of the leading economists from around the country, around the world even, and had them talk about some of these retirement issues. So we certainly didn't do it all ourselves. We decided to enlist some of the best minds in the business and to learn from them. And that's gone on over, I forget, really about 3 years, I suppose, that went on. And when we were finished with that, we thought, well, we really should try to write up what we've learned in a book that we think may help ordinary people who are interested in these topics and policymakers who are thinking about what changes might be made. And so that's what led us to put this book together. So we were standing on the shoulders of some experts, and as you say, it was quite a bit of work to put it together.
I can only imagine. Well, we've talked about so much, and yet I know we haven't even scratched the surface of the retirement system and changes, but I think we have a much better kind of grasp on the system we have, maybe why it's not working so well and what we could do to improve it. But for everyone listening, I'm wondering if you could leave us with, you know, some takeaways or some action steps. How do we make the most out of our retirement plan or options that we have available to us, given that the system might not be, you know, the best for us, but it's what we've got right now? How do we set ourselves up for success?
Well, I can't resist hoping that some of your readers will buy our book, The Retirement Challenge. I'm Martin Bailey, and Ben Harris is my co-author. But let me try to give you a less self-centered answer to your question. I wouldn't get too caught up with the idea that Social Security is going to fail, the stock market's going to collapse, and all that stuff. I think that those things will continue to provide support and that you need to take advantage of them. So do the saving that you need to do. If you haven't started in your 20s, then you can start in your 30s. If you haven't started in your 30s, you can start in your 40s. If you haven't started in your 40s, you can still start in your 50s. Another thing that we haven't mentioned, I think, is important is don't retire too early unless you really have a lot of money and you just want to retire. But if you're a little bit thin on your retirement assets, wait a while before you retire and don't start collecting Social Security too early. If you start at age 62, you don't get much money. If you wait until 67 or 70, you get quite a bit more money, more than 70% higher benefit if you wait to age 70 compared to age 62. So don't retire too early. Don't start collecting Social Security too early. And in fact, if you work a little bit longer, that also gives you a bit more time to save and a little bit less time to have to support through your retirement savings. So that's important. And then the last thing I'd say is get some professional advice and have them really talk to you. Maybe I think your employers should do this, really, is to give you some advice about how you need to make investments, what investments you should follow. Do you want to buy an annuity? Do you want to buy a deferred annuity, which most people haven't heard of, but it's a useful thing? How do you want to use the value of your house? Because that's an important asset for you. And you can either sell your house when you retire, or you can get out a reverse mortgage or something like that. How do you take best advantage of the value of your house? So how do you maximize those things, and what's your plan for long-term care? If you need, do you need to take an insurance policy on that too? And so those things. And then finally, for goodness sakes, make sure the people you vote for are going to tackle the problems that we need tackling. And those are not just the problems of old people. We've got a lot of problems of young people. But make sure that you say to those people that you're voting for, look, you need to take a look at Social Security and Medicare and do something about them. Don't just say, oh, we're going to cut this or cut that. Or don't just say, oh, we're going to raise taxes. Let's do this in a sensible way and put those programs on an even keel.
You know, Martin, one last thing I want to ask you, and you know, as I'm sitting here and I'm listening to your amazing advice, I'm also thinking that probably a lot of people, they get scared too when they think about retirement and all of the things that we have to think through. Maybe give us just a little, I don't know, words of wisdom or a little inspiration, you know, for listening to this conversation, and maybe we're feeling a little bit nervous, as we can often do around money. How do we balance that so that we don't get caught up in those emotions around money?
Well, it's hard not to get caught up in emotions around money, and so I'm not I think we all do that to some extent and are concerned about it. But I think the main thing to say is that if you take the right steps, and it doesn't mean you have to do them today or tomorrow, but if you eventually take the right steps, you can ensure yourself a nice, secure retirement that is within your grasp, and have confidence in yourself. Find out as much information as you can and see if you can make good decisions. And if you do those things, you will have done the best you could. And I think in the end, you will have a secure retirement and you won't have to worry so much.
Has your answer changed from my first question? How do you feel about how much you've saved for retirement? Still excited, freaked out, or still somewhere in between? What I love is that Martin is not telling you that you have to have saved X dollars by X date or age. Instead, his advice is just to start saving and stop worrying so much about, will Social Security be there? Will I have enough? And all of those other puzzling questions. Sure, you want to have enough saved to last you through retirement. So with a system that is obsolete, at the end of the day, you just got to do what's best for you and the best that you can. You can find Martin's book, The Retirement Challenge, on Amazon. And I have to say, it is definitely worth a read. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, share it with somebody else and help set them free a little bit from this idea that retirement is scary, right? Help invite them into this idea that the system is obsolete, so let's just do the best we can. As always, you can head to the show notes for all the links to my episode guest, as well as the sponsors who make this show possible. I'll see you back here in a few days for a brand new episode.